This is the Visual Developers Podcast with your hosts, Matt Varghese and Ben Parker. From maker interviews to tutorials and more, we're here to talk about all things no code.
Hi, everybody. Ben here with Visual Dev FM, and we're back for another episode. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Lacey and Matt.
Hola.
Hello.
And for this special no-code roundup section of the podcast, we're joined by the incredible Parker Thompson as well.
Hello.
So excited to have Parker here. And in fact, we're just going to start things off. We're going to jump right in. This episode is actually, we did an interview with Max Lind of 8020, and it was such a fun talk and conversation, and I can't wait for you to listen to it. And I hope that you get through the no-code roundup and give it a listen, because there's a lot of great things in there. Max really shared a lot of great wisdom and thoughts, and we talked for an hour, and we were like, okay, we really have to stop. We could have talked for another two. It was just such a great conversation. Can't wait for you to listen to it. But before we get there, we'll do our no-code roundup, and to start things off, we want to talk about Parker's no-code report. So Parker launched that this past week. Super awesome, and I'm super stoked about it. And so, Parker, you want to tell us a little bit about what you're building and give us some more details?
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, thanks so much for having me. I'm like pumped to be a part of this no-code roundup. I'll kind of tell you how your no-code roundup has really shaped the way no-code report has come about too. So first, to just kind of say what it is, I mean, it did launch yesterday, two days ago, so kind of hot off the press. It's a really quick and basic summary of what's happening in no-code throughout the week. So think of it like all your favorite tweets retweeted in one spot, linking out to all the things if you want to learn more about it. And really, it's been this interesting journey over the past couple of months. I started out thinking I wanted to create this big, long, in-depth, like Twitter feed list for no-code news. And over the course of time, have realized there's a ton happening in no-code, like I'm sure you know. So like your no-code roundups, lengthy with all the Glide stuff plus. So over the course of time, I've really just like tried to simplify things. And ended up with this. So if you visit it, it is nocode.report, pretty easy to get to. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward.
We're excited about it. I'm so stoked that you finally got to launch it. I know you've been talking about it for a while. Just if you're listening, you definitely want to go check out nocode.report because it's super awesome. It was, it's great.
How often are you updating that report?
Weekly. So I think probably on Saturdays.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
It's a great way to spend my Saturday coffee time reading through the things that we have inevitably missed in our roundup. So I love it. It moves so fast. The space moves so fast. It's good. I'm so happy for you, man. And so thanks for joining. And so no code report. You will go check it out. All right. So next up on the list, this is something that is actually a little older, but we missed it a couple of episodes in a row, and I kept saying to myself, oh, we've got to talk about that next week. We're finally talking about it. There is a user on Twitter, RubyPH. It is at IRL in real life, RubyPH. So IRL, RubyPH. And tweeted at Squarespace. Squarespace 7.1 has proved a push away from open customization and workflow. They've updated a set of cookie cutters to choose from. This is what the tweet says. It might be easier to use if you're a beginner building one site, but it's going to affect the way freelancers use the platform. He then goes on to talk about how, really, people who use Squarespace to build for clients are going to have to like switch to tools like Webflow or what have you to really continue doing the work they're doing, because the direction that the Squarespace platform is moving is not conducive for this. And I know everybody has thoughts here, so I'm just going to open the floor, but let's talk about this just for a second.
Sure. So for me, if I were to see that, I obviously would be crushed if I was designing and developing on Squarespace. And I could totally understand that there would be so much frustration about that. I think on the other side of me is almost like, be glad and be done with it. Like if it's, there are other builders out there, Webflow, that are better. And I don't, like, I understand it's a difficult model to move away. It's like getting people off of WordPress. Like you don't realize how bad it is until you're out. And once you get into something else. And so I really think it would be it's a good like transition point. And also I think it also speaks to what the company's focus is. The company's focus isn't on allowing you to make money off of custom solutions for clients. It's about bringing in more income to their pockets, not yours. And so I really do feel for people that are, you know, struck by this and struggling with it. But I also think there are other alternatives. And if you are, you know, scrappy and determined to get out there and do it, there's other ways that this can be done.
This is tough for me because I like started web, I got into web design. Well, technically on Weebly, but I mean, who uses that anymore? But now like I use Squarespace and I really loved it. And I used it for 2 years. And I think it's got a, you know, a purpose and a use case, just like Weebly and Wix do. But it's disappointing to see that they've taken away the customization. I'm wondering what causes them to do that from a business perspective. Like, is that like a, you know, a smaller code base to maintain while like trying to get like land grab at Wix customers to try to get them over to Squarespace? I don't know what would cause that, but I think Lacey's dead on here. Like, it's a good transition point to go to tools like Webflow or, you know, the plethora of others out there. I think this is a great learning point. And also, I think the only thing I disagree with here is, and maybe there's context I'm missing, but this person said that Webflow is more expensive. I think it's about the same price. I think Squarespace was like $16 a month and then annually. And then Webflow's, you know, the CMS plan is like about $16 a month too. So, I mean, I don't think there shouldn't be a huge cost difference, but I totally understand where this person's coming from. If I was still using Squarespace, I would be feeling the pressure too and like frustrated.
I think what they're referring to pricing wise is probably those hosting plans and an account plan.
Right.
Maybe that's where, because I mean, if you're building a lot of sites, you're going to need like a pro plan or something like that. Now they did. Squarespace did respond to this tweet that essentially said, like, "Hey, 7.1 still exists. You can still do all the things that you did before. Don't worry about that." But Ruby made a real point here of like, "Hey, it's not so much about what's still available. It's that when you deprecate this version, will these customizations still live on?" Like, because it seems like you're moving to a more streamlined version of the product. And I also missed a great opportunity to your mom joke here. If there's that still a thing, your mom uses Weebly. That's who uses Weebly. I don't
know. Dang, got him.
No, stop. I'll stop. That's terrible. I apologize to everybody. No, that was dumb. Okay.
I'm a mom. What are you saying?
Oh, dang. See, man, under the gun. And I earned every bit of this ire that I'm going to get. It's okay, though. It's okay. So codecrumbs.co, this is from Noah. And he did tweet about a cool little piece to always keep the copyright year current on your Webflow project in the footer, which is really cool. This is something I do in my own projects anyway, but it's fun that he's got this all set up to, so that if maybe you're not as adept with code or you know, integrating these pieces, it just might be a little quicker, easier step for you.
I can't remember if we talked about Code Crumbs in previous episodes. I feel like we might have touched on it, or Noah was working on it. But if this is a quick plug for Code Crumbs, it's a great resource that Noah Raskin is building. He's one of the best, you know, Webflow experts I know, and you know, JavaScript, you know, expert. I hate the word ninja, so I'm not going to use that. But JavaScript experts I know, and he launched Code Crumbs, which is essentially a library of custom code snippets that you'll commonly need on Webflow projects. So if you are looking to get, you know, custom code snippets, go to codecrumbs.co.
And you can't call him a JavaScript ninja because that's technically Bart, who works at Webflow. I think he has the JavaScript ninja handle in the forum. Shout out to Bart, who's a legend and one of the coolest people I've ever met. Love that guy. Speaking of Noah, this is out of order in our outline, so we're going to skip this. We're going to skip down to this, and then we'll skip it later. But Sarkis tweeted that for the past few hours, this was from earlier, February 13th, for the past few hours, Noah, Nelson, the Pixel Geek, Ray, they've been playing a game of roulette live on Zoom and meeting talented no-coders from around the world, exchanging experiences. And so they've decided to do that once a week. So I will put links to all their Twitter accounts so you can check this out and jump in on this once a week. But it's a really cool idea, a great way to connect with other no-coders. I love this picture because it looks like it's some sort of boy band album that really missed its mark. Super cool. Super cool.
It makes me laugh just looking at this picture. If you're listening to the podcast, please go to the show notes and look at this picture. But so does it work that like you hit their Zoom link and then you don't know which one you're going to get? How does the
I wasn't a part of it. Maybe they're rolling the dice and just hitting random no coders, or maybe they're putting the call out and saying join in, and then whoever joins in is a part of the conversation.
I think that's what it was, because I'm pretty sure I recall Sarkis tweeting in all caps, "Join this Zoom call right now!" with many exclamation marks. And I did not join at the time because I was a little concerned about what was going on in the Zoom call. But I think that that's the method of doing it, and that's a cool thing. I honestly need to jump in on a call one of these days.
Yeah, and it'd be something fly on the wall. Great conversation. A lot of people who are really good at using Webflow. So be wonderful to check out. Also, nocodemeetups.co. Super cool. If you're looking for a meetup that's not just a Webflow meetup, it's not just, you know, Xtool meetup, but it's just, now some of them might be for specific tools, but if you're looking for no code meetups, this is a place to find out where people are meeting up, getting together, talking about no code in your community. Definitely worth checking out. It's from Joshua and the No Code Founders, and it is wonderful. If you haven't checked it out, if you're not a part of No Code Founders, Google No Code Founders and join the Slack community. It is a wonderful community. Lots of great conversation. They even have a meetups channel there. So definitely worth checking out. Thank you, Josh, for the awesome, awesome resource. And this is the weekly chance for me to say this is not a Glide podcast, but we do have a couple of new pieces from Glide. One of these is they have a new roll-up column that can count sum, average, etc. This is so useful. Shout out to Coda, because I use this in Coda all the time, but having this available in Glide is super helpful. So if you have a bunch of values, to be able to just average them and then display that in the app somewhere, really great without you having to do a lot of work. This is a super cool feature. The other one that I think is even bigger is Glide apps can now trigger your Zapier tasks for the ultimate code-free workflow. So they have some instructions to try their open beta. It's in beta, but you use a Glide app, trigger a workflow. Like for me, I think this is awesome. So one of my least favorite Zaps, Integromat scenarios, whatever you want to call it, is watch a Google Sheet. Google Sheet has so many more options than Airtable. Sorry, Airtable. I'm just not as big as Airtable. Hot take. I don't like Airtable as much as everybody else. I don't know what it is. It's not bad. It's great. It's good stuff. Give me my Google Sheet, you know what I mean? So, but Google Sheet, you watch it for an update. And so you can change your Google Sheet, go get a sandwich, watch an episode of The Office on Netflix, like, you know, do some push-ups, just like whatever, come back. And your Zap is just now fired just because that's how the API works within from Google. Can you imagine updating a sheet that's shared by Webflow or another app, and then being able to punch a button and then fire a Zap to sync all that information up instantly, so you don't have to wait for that. So if you can even use this for a client app, they can update their Webflow CMS, like fill in the information, literally hit a button, boom, that all fires and updates Webflow and their marketing side or whatever it is they're using. This is a super cool feature.
This looks like really neat. I might be out of the loop here because I've never done it before, but was there any Zapier integration at all with Glide, or is this literally the first instance ever?
So if you go back and look up Zapier and Glide, I don't think there's any direct workflows between them because it's a Google Sheet. So technically all your Zaps were worked with G Suite or Google. And then, you know, you benefited from it in Glide, but
right,
weren't direct Glide integrations. But this is a trigger. So being able to trigger a flow, I mean, you can even like, you could build your own app to like, you could use Zapier and home automation to literally turn on your lights with a Glide app, you know, at home. Like you could do all kinds of things with this. Like the flexibility and the really, the power is going to be, I can't wait to see what people do with this. I'm sure there's probably already lots of responses on it, but.
I'm 100% sure about that. It's really interesting. Like, I feel like that did not get as much eyes on it as I thought it would, because you're right. Like there's so many things you can do with this piece. Again, my question is, I am wondering what Glide's end goal is here. Like, is it to become a big, you know, is it going to be like a Glide versus DraftBit situation? Like where like someone is gunning for like, we're the number one mobile app builder spot, or are they going to stick to PWAs? Or I'd be interested to see how this plays out. Maybe we'll have we'll try to get someone on from Glide. Maybe Jack.
Oh, that would be awesome. I would love to have them on to talk about it. Like this is a really cool feature. It reminds me of like Integromat has a thing, an app that will work with your watch. So you can literally fire Integromat scenarios from an Apple Watch, which is really cool. Same kind of concept, but now you're firing a Zap from a Glide app. Seems really, really cool. So super, super stoked about this. Can't wait to try it out. So Joe from New Code and KP, this is KP underscore on Twitter. They were announcing a new initiative called No Code Camp. So for an hour each week, they will host a free online session where you can get help with anything no code, beginners, experts, everybody welcome. It's like, they say it's like office hours. So 10 spots only, and you DM KP or Joe to get in on this. So super cool. Definitely check it out. Links in the show description on how to go see this, send your and then send your messages and be involved. This is a super cool thing to do, by the way. Love this. So props to you guys for just helping, supporting, being a part of the community. Always awesome. So shout out. After this, DraftBit. It feels like it's been a minute since we've talked about DraftBit, but they just launched new custom screen code. So now you can add your own functions to apps and DraftBits and DraftBit. So now it's this seems contrary to no code. Like you're like, hey, this is a no code podcast, but it does really extend the functionality of what you could do with DraftBit. It seems like a super, super cool piece. So they did list some of the things you can accomplish using custom screen code, sending data to Airtable or any other REST API, enabling user geolocation, authenticating users with Facebook and Google. I know they were going to put together some guides on how to do this, so they might have some examples of some of this that you could still and use. I love this.
I'm really looking forward to this particularly, and I would almost love to see more, you know, ability to add custom code snippets, because as you'll hear in the interview after this, we talked to Max Lind from 8020 about, you know, the use of custom code snippets or low code in terms of, you know, building a project. And, you know, you do what it takes to get the job done. And if that's like building a custom function or writing a custom function, like, you know, that's that. And I think we should encourage that. So I'm really glad they pushed this out. I'm sure that I will be using this extensively whenever I get into DraftBit.
I can't wait. I've been playing with DraftBit some. I've been working on a little piece of content too to go with it. So hoping to share that sometime really soon. Maybe we can get somebody from the DraftBit team to come on at the same time, talk a little bit about the tool. But super awesome. If you haven't been using it, definitely get in there and check it out. This is just because I wanted to, and I'm super biased because I work at Webflow, but Andrew Wilkinson just tweeted, "I love Webflow" in all caps. That is all. I love that tweet. So super awesome. I've got nothing else, but Webflow is amazing. Okay, moving on. In the same vein as the office hours type thing that we heard from Joe and New Code, MakerPad has, I think we talked about this, but they had boot camps they started. MakerPad, No Code Bootcamp graduates. They had their first class of graduates. And so linked to the tweet here, but They announced some of those graduates and posted a certificate. This looks super cool. I just think this is unbelievably awesome, and I'm so happy for MakerPad. And if you're interested in kind of upping your no-code game or really having a more intensive look at building with no-code, definitely something you should check out. I also saw an Adalo tweet. So Adalo tweeted about an app that was built in Adalo, and they didn't offer a lot of context, but reading it, it's Sebastian Hoffman who released this app. And after months of long nights, weekends, he's proud to have launched a subscription manager app for iOS and Android built completely without code. He tweeted to Adalo, said he was going to share his learnings of his journey as a solo maker. But we got the link here for his Product Hunt post. Also a link to the app so you can go check it out. Subscription managers are cool. Being able to manage those subscriptions and kind of know where you're spending your money is awesome. The fact that this was done in Adalo with no code is unbelievable. Adalo is such a cool app.
There are massive like fintech tools that are literally based around this entire concept. I use one to make sure that I'm, because you know, nowadays it's death by 1,000 subscriptions. So I am trying to keep my subscriptions under control too. So shouts to Sebastian, because I did not realize that Adalo could be used to build something like this, because there's so many pieces here, because you have to read people's bank accounts and like deal with that data and, you know, transform it and make it work for you. So I am going to download this and check it out, because it'll be interesting to see how well it works.
Super cool. I just think anybody who can get an app to that point, no code, like brilliant. That's the whole point of this whole no code movement. I love it. I also saw, we don't talk about Figma enough in this podcast, and that's going to change. I did see Jordan Singer posted on Twitter a Figma plugin he created called Genie. And basically what it does is you can pre-build components, and then you can quickly sketch it out. So you can use a rectangle to represent a list, and you use a circle to represent an avatar or whatever, and you just quickly lay it out, and it uses your components and builds that view for you without you having to do it yourself. Unbelievable. It's such a cool plugin. I did check it out, and it is awesome. So if you are a Figma user, definitely get your hands on this. Give it a go. It's wonderful to use. We are Stacker. So NoCode Jack posted this, said Tom told him about We Are Stacker. And I had seen a couple of tweets about We Are Stacker, but if I'm honest, in the deluge of no-code tools that, you know, come out, it seems like every day there's a new no-code tool. I missed this one. And it's not something I really dove deep into. And so I want to say thanks to Jack and to Tom. This is super cool. I checked out We Are Stacker. It is Stacker's an awesome app. Like, if you haven't been using it, if you've been looking for a way to use a no-code tool like Airtable and gate content, kind of have your own dashboard based off that content, this is what you're looking for. It is a super, super powerful app, and it's so simple, but it's beautiful.
This Stacker, honestly. Shout out to Lacey too for sending it in our group chat, because otherwise I probably wouldn't have seen it. It could not have come at a better time for me, because I saw it this weekend. And one of the things I was struggling with is I had a client that contacted me that essentially they do project management, and everything they have is in Airtable. Their current jobs, the jobs they're bidding on, you know, all these like different pieces of information, tons of records. But they didn't want they have a big company, and they didn't want their entire team in Airtable, because it's kind of like, you know, editing data in a spreadsheet is not really that fun or great. So they were trying to send it to Webflow and, you know, update Airtable data in Webflow in real time, which was really hard to get a prototype on. Like, there were so many like IntegraMAT pieces and like routers and all these things in the mix. And I was like, I don't know if this is like really a good solution. And then I saw this, and I tried it out, and then within the day, I built the entire, like, all these, like, custom layouts and custom views, and, like, it handles all your user auth for you, and, like, I think this is an incredible app. And I messaged, I just, like, wrote into support, and it was, like, I mean, I think one of the founders is in the UK and one is in Switzerland. It was like 11 p.m. at night in Switzerland. And the guy responded to me and helped me fix my issue. So like, if you like, the functionality is great. The software is definitely there, but then it's backed by great support too. So, and then I was reading today, I think they raised like a 1.2 million seed round. So good for them. I'm excited to see where this goes. And I'm almost positive I'm going to figure out some way to incorporate into my stack a little bit more going forward.
1,000%. So this is something I'm going to use too. The weird thing was like, so I had an Airtable to use, but then it's like, hey, you also need a table for your users before you even get started. That threw me for a loop for a second, but it's once I got into the app.
The user table piece actually threw me for a loop like three times. Like that's actually the thing I messaged support about. I was like, hey, I have these three portals that I don't need. Can you delete them for me? Because like, I was like, oh yeah, I can create the users table later. And then I was like, oh crap, I probably should not have done that later. So yeah, I think that was the only part that like threw me off, but the rest of it, it's like super intuitive. Like I didn't really have to go through help docs or anything. So shout out to them again. I'm a big, big fan.
Also, while we're talking about sheets, there is nothing in the outline for this. So if you're looking for it, you're not going to see it, Matt Lacey Parker. But Dash is now partnered with MakerPad. I don't know if you've seen that. Dash is a really great no-code sheets tool that is awesome. We haven't talked about it here, but it is on our list of like things we eventually want to tackle. There's so many no-code tools to talk about, so many options. But really, really cool. So props to them. Super excited to see that. Andrew Davidson and Luhu, Andrew posted that they created a YouTube channel for Luhu, and he muddled his way through his first video. Welcome to what we do every week, Andrew. We muddle our way through this podcast, and yet people still listen. So I know I'll be watching your videos. Super excited that you started this channel. So shout out to you. Really cool. Another tool that I saw today on Product Hunt, which was it's called DevSync. So if I'm understanding it correctly, essentially what it does is that it's a Chrome extension, and you can visually, like you use it with a local host on your computer, you can visually style a site like you would in Webflow, I guess. I don't know if it has all the same features, probably not, but has a lot of things like you can visually style a site, and then you can click a button and it takes all that code and syncs it to your code base in your code editor. So then you can just open up your code editor and all that visual design you did, all that code is sitting there for you. Super, super cool tool. I know some people who will really, this tool will resonate with them a lot, who write a lot more code than they do use visual development tools, but they like what Webflow or other tools bring, and they like to create and export and incorporate. So this might be something that other people see and think is pretty neat. Links in the description to Product Hunt post and to the website. So that's this week's no code roundup. That's a lot. So one of the things that we have talked about, just so you know, is possibly splitting this into its own weekly thing. We don't know what we're going to do, but it might be something that happens sooner rather than later because there's so much no code news. So maybe no code roundup separate from interview or main topic. But we'll let you know, keep you updated. Some things we do want to let you know about is tomorrow, No Codies voting ends. So if you wanted to vote for the No Codies, you know, you've got today, Tuesday, which is the day hopefully you're listening to this, the day it released, and the next day, and that is it. You're just a couple days left in voting. So definitely get to over to nocodies.com and start checking that out and voting for your favorite makers, tools, products, because that's going to close soon. Also, for the month of March, we are not taking a break, but we are shifting things up. And so Matt and I are taking more of a backseat role, and Lacey is going to completely drive, and we're dedicating the whole month to women in tech, and I'm just excited about that. And we can't wait for you to hear some of the guests that we have lined up. It's going to be super awesome. So make sure that you're listening and keep your podcast app ready to download these awesome episodes that are coming. So lots of great content. We want to thank you for listening and enjoy this episode and interview with Max Lind. And I want to say thanks to Parker for joining us. We'll see you guys.
Bye.
Max, welcome. And Max is the general manager of 8020, no code agency in the capital, tiny capital family. And Max has a lot of experience in the creative world. He worked at Designer News, head of partnerships at Dribbble, if I did my research right, field marketing manager, designer evangelist at Abstract, which is a very cool tool. But even better, Max is a great person, and it's always great to get to talk to him. I enjoy our conversations, and so I'm glad he's on the show with us today. And so, welcome, Max.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, thanks obviously for the opportunity to chat about 8020 specifically, but also just as a fan of the podcast itself, it feels pretty nice to be on.
Awesome. Well, I was just kind of curious just to start things off. When Andrew approached you about running a no-code agency, like, what were your initial thoughts? Were you already a fan of no-code tools, and did you need to be convinced that this kind of concept could work?
Yeah. We had kept in touch after I left Dribbble and went to Abstract to work for a while. And my short answer was like, yes, definitely. It sounds like a great opportunity. You know, I really respect, you know, Andrew and Chris and what they've done with Tiny and the whole approach. They're essentially what they're doing from the perspective of, like, you know, building a business that they want to work at and anti-goals and all this stuff. So the idea of, like, coming back to the Tiny family felt pretty interesting. On top of that, you know, certainly the, you know, running an agency that's solely focused on, you know, visual development, no code was the icing on the cake, I guess, just because, you know, I tangentially followed the space for a while, you know, had used some tools myself for personal projects. It was one of those things too, where, you know, I was sort of ready to get back into a role that kind of scratched that creative itch that I feel like everybody that's been a designer of some sort, you know, has in their life. So, it honestly kind of came up randomly, but it, at the same time, it felt pretty natural to join and run things over at 8020.
That's awesome. So what has the reaction been like in the creative world? I know that when I talk to, like, even people in the creative world of small world of Oklahoma City, when you mention, like, oh, I'm building sites on Webflow, they're like, oh, you're cheating, then you're not really building sites, you know? And sometimes there's that chip on the shoulder with no-code tools. I mean, what has it been like? Have people been supportive? Do you get a lot of doubtful looks? What's that like?
Yeah, I would say generally supportive for the most part, for sure. I think one of our biggest hurdles is, you know, just by proxy of being attached to Tiny and when we initially kind of launched in early January, half the folks that came to talk to us, you know, knew exactly what they wanted and totally understood the value of no-code. And then the other half had no idea what it was or what it meant, but they just saw the words, you know, faster and less expensive. So, it's certainly a challenge from our standpoint to kind of, like, I guess, balance both of those. You know, you certainly don't want to make any assumptions about, like, where somebody's knowledge is on the space, but at the same time, you know, wanting to make sure that they understand the value that we can provide. You know, we're even on the site that we're pretty, I don't want to say vague. We're pretty high level with our pitch, essentially, you know, just talking about helping companies move faster without code. That can certainly mean a lot of things. You know, even just like the term no code means a lot of things to a lot of people, as I'm sure you all can attest. But it's been a pretty wild ride thus far in a very, very great way. And we've had a lot of folks that have signed up for projects now that have really appreciated the way that we approach projects, just simply because, you know, we're treating everybody different in the sense of, you know, not, we don't have a rigid process. We're very fluid with, you know, our not only our communication, but, like, how we work on our pricing and trying to find something that fits them specifically. I know there's certainly a lot of other agencies that maybe have tried to take in this approach, but it's been pretty positive thus far. I would say, you know, there's certainly some doubters to some extent about the whole the broader no code space, or to your point, like, you know, oh, is it cheating the, you know, by using Webflow? I do have a little bit of you know, I guess, drive in me to want to make sure that the folks that do come to us don't think that, you know, we're selling them snake oil or something by any means. You know, that there's a certain fear there, but I think it's also the interesting part of, like, how do we tell our story that also, like, attaches ourselves to this broader, you know, no code visual development movement?
while running 80/20, like after that big tweet storm that Andrew Wilkinson put out and after the Medium post that you wrote, we talked right before the call about, you know, an influx of clients coming in. What type of clients are you particularly talking to? Are these like small businesses? Are these SaaS companies? Are these enterprise level companies? Because I'd be curious to know what comes from that.
Yeah. At this point, it's been, I would say mostly like in the small to medium category. You know, in terms of industry, they're kind of all over the place. I mean, there's some that are, you know, startups that are venture backed. There's some that are like fully bootstrapped, or maybe they tried an idea on their own and then they're ready for a change. You know, some of the clients currently are a little bit all over the board. I mean, we're doing some just like general marketing sites. We're doing some SaaS products. We're doing, there's a couple that are in like the broader like nonprofit space. You know, websites, web apps, mobile apps. It's honestly a little bit of everything, which at this point in time too, just, you know, with us being, for all intents and purposes, being brand new, I think we're also kind of trying to get a sense of our footing, simply from the standpoint of just like, yes, like who is our ideal customer or client rather, but also, what's our ideal project? Because at the same time, you know, we want to be able to provide a service to somebody that, wants to come to us specifically because, you know, we hopefully maybe become the experts in one, you know, maybe it's a small niche of the space, but ultimately that space still just relies back on that idea of, you know, keeping things simple and not, you know, not relying too much on code.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I can totally see that. So with working with no code products, so I think, you know, a huge benefit is that you cut down on time, and then you cut down on time, you can naturally cut down on cost. Has it been difficult to navigate pricing these projects where it's like, yes, it's faster and it's in some ways more efficient without sacrificing, but it's still very quality, scalable work?
Yeah, it's interesting that you ask that, because I would say one of the biggest hurdles that I'm still trying to tackle is certainly like how we pitch it. I definitely do not want to devalue, you know, our, you know, design expertise or design prowess, or, you know, like the end product that you're actually going to get. You know, it's the idea of saying, you know, something is cheap versus less expensive. You know, it's like, certainly we're less expensive, but you know, we're certainly not sacrificing anything from the standpoint of, you know, producing extremely high quality designs. But what I would say is, I kind of going back to that whole our conversations with clients being fluid, is that our approach tends to kind of I guess lean on this idea of a good, better, best scenario, meaning, you know, we might have some clients come to us with an idea, and they may or may not have a price in mind, because maybe they don't necessarily know what things might cost. But with this sort of good, better, best scenario, we can sort of pitch them on a couple different ideas that still get the same thing out the door with what they're wanting. But maybe, you know, it's like the difference between a quick and dirty MVP that's fully functional, still with their data, being plugged in, that they can iterate on over time, as compared to maybe they just like right from the get-go, they still want to build that quick and dirty MVP, but they want to also, at the same time, still really be thinking about, okay, what's the plan for 3 or 6 or 12 months down the road? And how do you iterate on that idea to build the best version of the project or the idea or the business or whatever it might be. So, which actually kind of gets into too, just what I would say our ideal client actually is those folks that they have a certain sense of what they're trying to accomplish. Maybe it's a very specific idea with an outline of what they're trying to, what their goals are, or maybe it's just like, I think I want to build, you know, a copycat version of Lyft for my hyperlocal market, but it's only for, you know, unicycles or something. In either scenario, I think part of our value is just the ability to provide just some answers on how they could proceed with next steps. You know, like, you know, certainly there's a lot of folks that have some really great ideas, and again, you all can attest to this. But you know, the idea of no code really catching steam now just provides new avenues for all these people's ideas to like truly come to life. Whether that's again, if it turns out to be a multi-million dollar idea, awesome. If it just comes out to be something that, you know, makes them, you know, money as a side business, that's great too. But it can, you know, slowly but surely, now that there's tools out there, it can become a real life thing.
That's awesome. And I know you mentioned to me once, like when you talk to clients about these projects, it's you're very clear on limitations of the tooling or the associated cost moving forward of using something like a Zapier or an Integromat. You know, when you talk about those things, what is that process like for 80/20? And then, you know, when you have a project scope that maybe is a, you know, is 110%, I can do this with no code. Do you even talk about what tools you're going to use, or do you just say like, let's go, we got this?
Yeah, I would say in most every case, I do still feel it's important for us to communicate to the client like ultimately what we're doing and what's happening behind the scenes. Now, to the extent that they actually want to know, we can kind of tailor that back a little bit. But like actually giving them a full peek behind the curtain, I think is important for a variety of reasons. And, you know, some of that might just be, you know, credit to what we're trying to accomplish as like, as part of our pitch and our push. But, you know, I think a lot of it comes back down to the idea that, you know, being transparent with, the tools and services that we're using is important because we want to ultimately give them the ability to tweak and maintain, their product, you know, over time without, you know, without the worry or hassle of potentially having to hire expensive developers. And that's certainly, you know, like maybe one angle that we could take. There might be a situation too, where, you know, some folks that are developers or engineers, you know, like have this worry about like, well, what about my job? And it's like, well, typically part of our pitch is really like, well, let us take on some of the, you know, maybe it's a marketing website and there's some CMS components and, you know, something else going on behind the scenes, but let us tackle some of that stuff. So then you can, you know, use your developers and engineers' times to, fully focus on the actual product that actually makes the company money to then grow. So I think regardless of the situation or the project, I still feel it pretty important to show what's going on behind the scenes.
That's awesome. And so when you're like, as you're shaping 80/20 and you're kind of navigating this road, you know, what does 80/20's tech stack look like? What no code tools are you investing in from a sweat equity standpoint? So like, do you plan to stay platform agnostic? Are you only looking for projects that are in the wheelhouse of this preferred stack? I mean, how are you navigating that space?
Yeah. The short answer to the, you know, platform agnostic question is, yes, we do have a set of like preferred tools is what I've kind of been calling them, but I definitely don't want us to ever to be too stagnant. I mean, there's a new tool or service on Product Hunt basically every day. Not to say like it's the best thing since sliced bread, but it's like this idea of we're so early on in the infancy of the no code movement or visual development movement, or maybe it's like the second coming of these things. Certainly this has existed for a while, but so we don't want to get too stagnant, I guess, in that respect. And so at the same time, it certainly is a challenge for us because, you know, it's like this idea of making sure that we're keeping abreast on what's going on, but without getting too lost into the weeds on the shiny new object. in terms of like the tools or the tech stack that we use today, we typically kind of like to break it up in the design phase, the build phase, and the connect phase. So like if that's part of a project, so we still like to, you know, lean on Figma and Sketch pretty heavily for designs. There's certainly a portion of projects where we'll kind of go just like in medium design, and, you know, maybe it's, we're just whatever tool we end up using where it's obviously, you know, just starting in there directly. As part of that build phase, you know, we lean pretty heavily on Webflow, which I feel like most in, you know, most do. We use Card as well for a number of projects, just obviously whatever fits the bill there. For the connect phase, we're big fans of Airtable, of course. And then kind of the glue piece, like, you know, using like Zapier or Integromat or Parabola, you know, and with all these tools that I've even mentioned thus far, what we're really trying to do too is, and this is maybe just a subtle plug for me selfishly, but, we're also trying to figure out like where does it make the most sense to partner up with some of these companies? Whatever that actually means. And I guess when I say that is, you know, like, so we're an official Webflow partner, and that provides us a variety of things, but it hopefully also provides us the, you know, the ability to then lean on Webflow when we need help with, you know, we have, the clients have very specific questions, and you know, when we hand projects off, certainly we're going to be there to answer a number of those, but there's going to be a point in time too, where we want to make sure that, you know, the tools or services that we do use also have their own, you know, great customer success teams in place to hopefully answer questions as well. Just, you know, by proxy of all these things being new, things are bound to break or things are bound to happen. So it's always important for us to have, you know, I guess at the end of the day, just some reliance or a safety net of sorts to lean on. And then I kind of noted like there's like a wild card space, I guess, for lack of a better term, but some tools that I think are like kind of up and coming that we're really interested in. One of which is Bravo. I think there's a lot of interesting things we can do from that standpoint to you know, get our Figma designs in folks' hands as real life, living, breathing apps really quickly. The other is DraftBit. I'm really hoping DraftBit kind of, you know, eventually just becomes the Webflow of the mobile app development world. So fingers crossed on that one. But, you know, I'm naming a handful. We've certainly explored a number of others, you know, the Bubbles and the Glides and the Adalos and you name it. If it exists on MakerPad or No Code List, we've at least checked it out.
Bravo that, Studio, I love it so much.
Yeah. They seem like the nicest people in the world. But going back, I wanted to touch on a couple things. Because you brought up two really good points. First, on the agency partner, like or on the platform partnerships, I think that's a really interesting point. Because I don't know if the other platforms have it yet, but I know Webflow is like beta testing the partner program. And like, I don't know what all it entails other than like, I think right now, like you can get like a revenue split on like, you know, if you have client hosting, it's like a separate from like client billing, but it's like some sort of essentially like their affiliate program, but for partners. I think that would be really interesting to monitor in the coming months, especially with, you know, like you said, there's like all these new tools coming up, you know, in the market. But going back to the first thing you said about being platform agnostic, I'd be curious to know, because it's something I struggle with as well, how do you prioritize what tools to like pick and play around with? Because, you know, like no code is nice because you can actually get, you know, pretty used to a platform pretty quickly. But I would say it took me like a year to get my Webflow chops like really sharp to where I can actually like, you know, build quickly and things like that. So like, how do you prioritize what to play with and, you know, what to choose and what to sell with clients and things of that nature?
Yeah. It's the short answer is we don't have a very, you know, rigid or specific process at this point. Luckily, I've been sort of the de facto person to have a lot of these conversations with folks on that, you know, kind of like partner program front. So I've also kind of been the de facto, like, here's what we're going to use, person that just sort of dictates, not to say that we, you know, that wouldn't change, but I think, I would say, I think the interesting, you know, think from our standpoint in terms of, you know, making sure we're sort of keeping up with the Joneses is like this idea of, you know, I guess figuring out if there's a, and maybe this is like a subtle plug for an idea for somebody out there in the space. I know, again, like there's the MakerPads of the world that sort of do some of this, but as more options and opportunities for new services or tools and services grow, it's like, I would love for somebody to create like a wire cutter of the no code world. Just, you know, we're going to eventually run out of time where we just can't check out everything, but certainly want to make sure that we're not like leaving anything in the dust. Actually, another one that I just had a conversation with there, the folks over there was Dash. So it seems like Dash can do some like extremely interesting things behind the scenes. And, you know, like I start to think of like ideas on how we could use it, but then, you know, part of the problem too is just making sure that the tool that we're, you know, sort of trying to pitch as part of a project actually works for that project. It's not just like being used because it's the cool new thing. So yeah, I guess short answer there is it's definitely a work in progress, but luckily, you know, again, like tools or services like Webflow, we feel like extremely comfortable leaning pretty heavily on those just because, you know, Webflow is growing like a weed. It seems like they have the right people in place over there to making the right decisions about like not only like the product itself, but also like how they're pitching, you know, them as a company and the people behind the company.
So I'm biased here, but I'm going to agree with that statement. but yeah, no, I love that. And I completely agree. I was thinking about this Wirecutter thing that you mentioned myself, because there are a lot of no-code lists. Like, and if you find them, a lot of them, the goal is to list every app they can find and document it. But it's, you know, it's also subjective. And so many people are trying to, you know, you don't see a lot of people really paring that list down. And I think there's also a lot of people who they got their start on one platform like Bubble, or they got it on Webflow or whatever. And then they're ride or die for that platform. And so
yeah.
It's always interesting. It would be fun to have kind of a panel of people picking and choosing and rating those things, something to maybe we can tackle here.
Yeah. Well, and you know, just to add on to that too, like I think a lot about, you know, so Webflow can do a ton of things, of course, but there's still always like some cases where it's like, oh, we might want to try something else just because it's simpler. Or and I guess maybe in this case, I'll use like Card as an example. Like Card in comparison to some other tools certainly is obviously a lot more basic. And that's the pitch. You can kind of just create whatever you want with sort of like this one page site idea. Well, but from my standpoint, I think like the killer feature, like the dark horse feature of Card is like the ability to have one plan, and then from that one plan have, you know, a bunch of different custom domains from that single plan. So, and I say this too, because not, you know, I have my personal site on Card and I have some side projects on Card, but it's like this idea of being able to host custom domains from one single plan on Card and ultimately, you know, saving me, you know, hundreds of potentially thousands of dollars over time is like this crazy cool feature. Now, like, head to head, can it do the exact same things as Webflow? Like, you know, certainly not. But, you know, in terms of like this Wirecutter idea, like kind of pulling out those, like, why should you care about this service? Like, I would love to see that.
Yeah. Something maybe we can tackle. I'm adding it to a list because nice. We don't have enough going already. So, exactly. So like talking about no code, let's jump the other direction just really quickly. I'm just curious about code itself. Do you have any developers around to help write some code? I mean, on the day you launched, you I think Matt mentioned the Medium article that you released, but you know, one of the quotes of that was startups, small, mid-sized business, enterprise companies alike struggle to edit and maintain their current product and dream of a custom tailored solution without the hassle of building it themselves. In most scenarios, with about 80% of the output and just 20% of the effort, I see what you did there. We can do exactly that. I love that. But sometimes I found personally, even like when I'm working on these projects, like just a little bit of JavaScript takes this Webflow project from 90 to 100. It's really quick. So do you have people that you kind of rely on for those pieces?
Yes. So, you know, that's the kind of the funny thing, the maybe misnomer of the no code naming convention, whoever kind of came up with that and pushed that. But, you know, we certainly don't shy away from, you know, coming up with custom solutions using code, low code, or maybe something very specific as needed. You know, we totally understand that there's always going to be situations where something specific needs it a little, to your point, like a little extra, you know, on top to make it work, whether that's, you know, part of like the actual design or build, process that, you know, the aforementioned points that I'd made, or even some of like the connect phase, meaning, you know, like we have a client right now, for example, that relies on Clearbit Reveal as part of their, you know, just part of their tech stack, I guess, as part of their site. Well, you know, making sure that's part of the Webflow, you know, Webflow site and something that they can actually attach themselves to is, you know, we would never say that things can't be done in that regard, knowing that we can, you know, if we need to work with a little code and a little JavaScript, like, you know, we're more than capable of doing so.
That's awesome. Yeah. I do think that gets blown out of proportion too. I mean, sometimes, you just need a little bit more, or there's just a little piece that can really make a world of difference in what that project turns out. And just, this just a little polished pieces that, you know, just maybe aren't there yet. So
yeah. I also feel like no code, sometimes when people are talking about no code, it's almost like you have to stay no code for forever.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't see it that way. I think when I started doing no code, I think my JavaScript got like sharper, because like I was just like pushed a little bit to learn like, all right, how do I get this last piece? And I feel like that's what no code is about. Just like being scrappy and being efficient and, you know, building in the most efficient way possible. So I think I agree with you. I think, you know, no code gets a bad rap sometimes, or it's not really branded correctly because of the term itself.
I think it was the folks at MakerPad that said this, but they sort of defined it as like this idea of like they don't focus so much on the without code aspect, but they focus on like the tools that help you build things without the need for code. So it's like, to your point, it's like this idea of like, how far can you get? And then like over time, maybe you can get further and further, but it's like, you know, maybe, again, we can get you 80% of the way there. Maybe in some cases, you know, getting that last 20%, you know, you do need a little bit of code put on top.
I think it's great. I think it's great because it's one of those pieces where in my mind, using some code is not cheating at that point. It's just, we're accentuating things, you know, and sometimes projects need it and sometimes projects don't, and that's okay. But like, you know, the notion that because we use Webflow, we can't use JavaScript now, or we can't, you know, like it's like, it's this survival challenge where like, I have to make sure there's no extra code in here. I think that's definitely the wrong approach.
Right. Yeah. Totally agree. But back to that kind of that idea of, you know, the in medium design concept, but flipped, you know, here to the build concept of just like, you know, if you do need a little extra, then use a little extra, you know, if you don't, then you don't, but hopefully at the end of the day, it's like, we can kind of, again, keep leaning more heavily on the no code and without code portion, because again, just by proxy of the tools that are available these days.
So the no code space is so new. And it seems like all the experts are now like, they're running their own agencies. They've got their own companies. They've got their own startups. Has it been challenging starting a no code agency to find talent to bring on board or to work with?
I would say yes and no. Mainly because, well, I would say no, because luckily, you know, there's a lot of incredibly great, you know, communities like, you know, like Dribbble or MakerPad again, or even Twitter, that just have allowed us to find some folks that build really cool, interesting things that maybe want to do that sort of thing in a freelance capacity or contract capacity, or maybe full-time capacity. So from that standpoint, I would say no, that like, we've been able to find a lot of like really talented folks, like quite literally all over the globe. And as like a small side tangent to that too, I'm from Iowa. I've worked remote for a while now. You know, I'm very much like a, you know, where you're from doesn't necessarily matter anything. It's just like, you know, the opportunities that you get to work on projects or at jobs and prove yourself is obviously more important. And certainly that's a lot easier said than done. But I do really like this idea of, you know, giving folks opportunities, you know, wherever they exist on some of the projects that we've worked on, by finding them again, like on Dribbble, for instance, and having conversations with them, jumping on the phone, and then realizing that, like, you know, just because of where they lived previously, maybe they didn't get a chance to work on projects that were, you know, of interest or to some capacity or caliber that, you know, that we were offering. So in that regard, it's been really great thus far, you know, even connecting with a lot of folks, again, in those communities. On the flip side, it also has been a little challenging though, because I would say that we've had some conversations with folks that you know, we have talked about, you know, maybe trying to get them to come join the team full time, and ultimately, you know, like they've really enjoyed working for themselves and building their own brand. And obviously no discredit to, again, going back to the whole reason the 80-20 started and finding this need for companies and clients that wanted to lean more heavily on the no code route. It's also, you know, just, you know, given individuals this additional superpower of being able to build things quickly themselves too, and build their own brand. So I think it's ultimately, it's really interesting from our perspective, you know, just to be a part of the scene. You know, we're certainly not the first agency to kind of go this, you know, with this approach, and certainly won't be the last, but I do feel like, you know, the concept of us jumping into the pool, so to speak, is fun for everyone. It's like the idea of, you know, like I think Vlad said this, you know, in regards to the, you know, like kind of like the no code folks versus the code folks, but like us jumping into the pool is like, you know, hopefully this idea of like a rising tide lifts all boats. Like ultimately, like, you know, more folks that do this is just going to open up more opportunities. And the next time some freelancer pitches their client on Webflow, they're going to hopefully potentially know Webflow because it's become a household name, the same way, you know, Adobe did at some point in time.
Yeah, I definitely think that makes sense. So I'm working on a project right now, and it's an MVP for a company. And we initially talked about it, and they were scoping it out using code. And so we're kind of working that angle all the way around. And then I was like, you know, I saw their wireframes and everything, and I was like, I'm not trying to persuade you away from this idea that you have, but have you considered using a no-code tool? And I normally, when I say that, I get this long pause, and people just look at me like I have three heads, and they're like, a no-code what? I don't even know what that is. And so the person was like, oh, you mean Webflow? And pulled it up, and he had already started to build out some components in his site. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even have to sell you on this. Like, this is, I mean, not selling you, but like, I don't even have to like talk this up because you're already in it. And he was like, yeah, I just, you know, it's different than what I originally thought, but I don't know exactly what to do with it. And so it was funny to me, and I enjoyed it because it was actually the first, or I guess this is technically the second client that I've had that has worked their way kind of from a, you know, I'm going to start on this code base and then go like, not backwards, but kind of go all the way around of saying, actually, but I'm going to try it this way first. And we were able to like, just right there on the phone, it was like, okay, I can off the top of my head, give you a range of in code. This is how many hours it's going to take in Webflow, member stack, Airtable. This is how many hours it was going to take. And by the end of the call, it was easy to kind of sum down of, this is a, like, we've just kind of theoretically built your application using these tools. And that was really fun and exciting to work it that way. So with you were saying of it becoming like an Adobe of something that people are already familiar with, I think I agree. And I really want to see that. My other question is, so if, or I guess that wasn't really a question that I just asked, it was a statement, but, with looking at hiring people, so we had Marco on last episode, and we were talking about whether or not having a job as a no coder is a thing. And so for me, it is, I mean, cause that's, I make money freelancing and it's all no code. And, you know, Ben and Matt do stuff on the side, all no code, or Matt full time. But, and so it made me think, if you're looking for these people, what are you looking for? Like, what kind of skill sets, what kind of background? I'd be really curious to know.
Yeah. First, the short answer to your question about, like, you know, folks kind of becoming no coders, I, whatever that, you know, ends up actually being, or how you define that, I would totally agree that, like, that yes, that can be a thing, whatever that actually means, whether that's eventually they're becoming more schools or actually universities or programs that like really focus on this concept. You know, it's like pretty broad, but it's like this, it's more so like the idea of just generally being a designer or a developer. So like, I would say totally yes. In terms of the folks that we typically look for, I like to use the word like generalists. I typically think of myself as a generalist. You know, my background is in design, but then I kind of got into marketing roles and sales roles and business development and a little of this and a little of that. And it wasn't necessarily because I wasn't happy with anything. It was just like, I was always just like curious about the next thing. Obviously I've kind of, you know, I've always worked in the design community in the broader design space, but the idea of like kind of just becoming really in the know, you know, horizontally on a lot of things, it has been, I guess, beneficial to me. So I would say a lot of the folks that we end up trying to find are generalists, meaning, you know, they like to maybe make their own decisions with minimal direction. You know, they like to communicate with their clients directly, and they like to maybe kind of act as their own PM to some extent. You know, which I you know, I guess, you know, isn't necessarily for anybody, but maybe in a lot of ways, obviously some of the folks that we actually look for are those that have done their own side gigs or have at some point in time, maybe started an actual business of their own, but they're like, they've gotten to a point now where they just want to, they want to work on specific parts of the entire agency process. And really when it comes down to it too, you know, no discredit to some agencies that are big and super successful, but like, you know, they might have some folks that are like ultra specific on one, you know, one medium, which maybe it works great for them. But, I think just by proxy of working in no code space and having folks that, you know, maybe can design and build and connect and go back to those phases is like even more important to us. And, I've even mentioned a time or two that like, we're looking for folks that are dabblers, meaning they're just people that ultimately they like to explore and they like to try the new shiny two on product hunt. And they want to build just something in an hour and it's part of their free time with the new shiny tool, just because they're curious. You know, it's, there's something there about like that mentality or attitude. And certainly, you know, ultimately time is our biggest enemy to some extent. You know, everybody fights that same fight, but the folks that we really like or lean towards are those that want to kind of be their own boss. You know, it sounds a little hokey, but I think ultimately, you know, there's certainly a lot of them out there, and hopefully they're slowly but surely gravitating toward this broader no code space as well.
I'd be curious to know whether, so like right now you're looking for people to come work with you at 80/20, and you know, you just talked about being a generalist. Do you think that's a long-term play, or do you think as 80/20 grows, you're going to start looking for more specialists to actually, you know, dig deep on a specific medium?
Yeah, I would say it's likely that we will have a little bit of both. You know, it's you know, if like basketball fans, like you can't have a team full of, you know, folks that can shoot the three. You know, you need a little bit of everything from everybody. But hopefully, you know, like there's a lot of good teams that are just like truly team players that like, that can do a lot of those things. So I guess in some weird sports analogy, that's, you know, that's the kind of folks that we're going for. But to your point, I think to kind of get some of those stars or some of those folks that really like ignite new energy or new life into projects, or just like the excitement behind what we're trying to do, finding those specialists actually might make a lot of sense, especially knowing, you know, again, we'll just keep leaning on Webflow, but you know, if there's tools like Webflow that like, let's say, you know, all of a sudden Webflow releases an entire new feature set that allows you to build, you know, more custom, you know, mobile apps or web apps in a more direct way, like maybe we do need to lean more heavily on finding somebody that's like 100% solely focused on Webflow only, just for the sake of making sure that we're up to speed and, you know, internally too. So it's definitely a little bit of both, you know, but, yeah, I think just ultimately in the short term, having those folks that are the generalists or are the, right, I want to do a little bit of everything because I feel like it's important is, you know, ultimately the folks that work.
100%. Yeah. No, that totally makes sense to me. When running the agency, I know you guys just launched, you know, a month ago, but, do you get any pushback on no code tools and like not being able to own the solution? Because with code, you own the code, but with Zapier and TigerMet, you don't own the code outputs. With Webflow, you can, you know, you can export it. But like, I know I haven't gotten that pushback from my clients, but sometimes, you know, like Twitter, there are trolls on Twitter that talk about it, or I'll engage in some fight on Twitter and talk about it. So I'd be curious to hear your take on that.
Yeah. So we've had a couple of folks that have asked specifically about, you know, kind of those like IP or ownership questions. questions about like licensing or resellability. We kind of always have to say like, the short answer is it depends. And it's obviously kind of back to that idea of like what we're actually going to build it in. You know, a lot of times with our projects, we want to hopefully build that, again, that kind of quick and dirty MVP to make sure that we're like on the right track and we can kind of start doing some testing. But if we do know that down the road that, you know, the company is planning on wanting to own it 100% and they want to license it and they want to do, you know, this, that, and the other, you know, hopefully there's going to be more tools that allow you to do that. This is like a subtle push towards DraftBit to launch and help in that regard on the mobile app space. But I would say, you know, maybe one out of 10 conversations that we've had, that kind of angle comes up. I think when it does come up, I think there's some folks that just need to have a better understanding of like, what's sort of happening behind the scenes or like how the app is built or run. You know, for instance, we were working on a project in Bubble and had to kind of get some clarity on, you know, again, like the design itself and the content that we put in it. You know, those things are owned fully by us, but obviously Bubble has its own runtime engine. So like the idea of, anything that's run on Bubble has to stay within Bubble, that, you know, it can't be exported out. So there was like some fine lines there about like what the client was ultimately comfortable with. But I would say we don't run into it enough to be a concern at this point. But I do think that actually it has become a talking point or part of the broader conversation for a little while now, where some folks, again, like DraftBit is a great example, where they're thinking about the idea from the get-go that, yes, you can export it. Yes, you can 100% own it. And maybe you have to just fact check me on there, but I'm pretty sure. And, but it's also part of this idea that like, once you do those things, like maybe you do want to have a developer do a little, you know, last minute touch on the app itself before it goes out the door. So, we've had a little bit of both, I guess, but I would say for the most part, folks aren't too concerned about, it living in a no code space that maybe has to stay in that space.
No, that's a conversation I don't think is going to end anytime soon with no code tools for sure. One thing you did touch on that I wanted to come back to was you said, we're not the first agency to do this and we won't be the last either. I will say though, there is a flip side of this, because not that there aren't legitimate agencies doing work and not that there aren't agencies doing incredible work on a grand scale with large companies, because there definitely are. But there is something like when Andrew Wilkinson and Tiny Capital invest in something, it's kind of something where people are like, hold on a minute, wait, what's right. happening like here? I just remember when Andrew posted the tweet that I'm going to start a no-code agency, we shared it between ourselves and laughed. We were like, oh, this is a funny joke. And like nobody knew if that was serious or not, but we loved the idea. We were just like, oh, this is great. And we were 1,000% behind it. And there's something about like when a player like that comes into the field where you're like, okay, wait, this is a thing. Like this is going places.
Yeah. You know, I do have to kind of, you know, credit Andrew and Chris and the folks at Tiny. Like I do feel for what they're sort of focused on, especially these days, it does feel like they're kind of two moves ahead a lot of times. Again, not to say that others aren't doing it, but they've obviously invested and started companies in interesting spaces that overlap, that have, I wouldn't call them like competing efforts, but, you know, like for instance, we're working on a project currently where, you know, we're doing a website design and build for a podcast. And that podcast then wants to figure out, you know, kind of the marketing growth side of things. Well, it's not something we necessarily specialize in, but there's a company called Double Up that's part of the Tiny Capital family that fully focuses on that. And there's also a company, in the Tiny family called Supercast that is like helping those folks monetize the podcast specifically. So there's like this broader idea too of us at 80/20, but those that are part of the broader Tiny family, like how do we actually like play off each other and hand off projects or like work together in some sense, even though we're not in the same quote unquote offices. just by proxy of being part of the Tiny family and knowing that like Andrew and Chris and you know, everything that they're investing in and starting certainly has, there's a, you know, a theme here to some extent that these things overlap, and they're certainly overlapping in an interesting way that makes sense for everybody.
I love that concept so much of essentially, you know, all these companies working together. It reminds me of something I saw. Do you know who Gary Vaynerchuk is?
Yeah, yes.
So it reminds me of, like, I saw a video of his and it talked about the strategy behind like what he's building. And he's like, he says it, you know, when the economy collapses, he's going to go buy a bunch of companies and then he's going to run them through this massive, you know, agency he built, and they can do the marketing and they can do the builds and all of that. And, you know, they'll be able to spit out, you know, a great company that's like well marketed, well built. It sounds like that's what, you know, you and Andrew and Chris are all doing, you know, with Tiny and with 80/20. Would you say that's the case?
Yeah, there's probably a lot of similarities there. You know, the interesting thing is, you know, again, the Tiny's interest in the no code space has certainly existed for much longer than just 80/20 starting. You know, obviously a lot of the projects that were built at other companies, or even some of the things that came from those companies, were built with tools like Webflow or Airtable or Zapier or whatever, or even some of the tools that are used internally, certainly a lot of those. And it's just like, there became this, you know, it's like the most obvious thing in the room, but you know, the most obvious thing in the room that maybe to some doesn't seem like it should be something you should pursue because it is too obvious. It was kind of like, I feel like the standpoint that came to be here. So, yeah, it's interesting to see what's happening from that too, because I think, you know, there could be something here, and who knows really, but let's just take like the visual development, you know, kind of no code space specifically. So again, obviously, you know, 80/20, we're working on no code projects. You know, there's another agency called Z1 that's really great digital product studio that's working on some in that space, but they're obviously more specialized in the products. Obviously, like, you know, Tiny's invested in MakerPad and MemberStack. Sorry, but anyway, my point was going to be maybe there's this some concept of like there's enough things happening under Tiny in the no code space that there's like a need for another like mini umbrella company of some sort that kind of like is just solely focused on figuring out how to make these things run together. And maybe in some sense, you know, like what we're going to do at 80/20 certainly is, you know, client work and folks that we're, you know, that we're working with directly on projects, but maybe there's a case for us to also start a little Skunkworks of sorts that sort of spits out our own little mini project or products. You know, maybe it's like we have a small no code venture studio that we also like cook up our own ideas that maybe we, you know, that some come to be little mini tiny companies that can exist within Tiny. And then maybe others just like, well, we tried something. It didn't necessarily work, but at least we learned some lessons along the way and we can figure out how to maybe, you know, either resell this idea or if nothing else, we just, you know, we tested a few things and got to learn a few tools along the way.
I love the Skunkworks idea. I can't tell you how much I love that idea, because there are so many times I start to build something or tinker with something or play even with a concept in Parabola or in Webflow and in this tool. And it never sees the light of day, but I know, like, you know, this could probably be sold. It's just I have not had the time to pursue it or whatever. And I think there's a lot of that happens when you start, especially when you start scoping client work with no code, because you – I don't think these tools get enough credit for just how powerful they are. And, you know, Parabola and Integromat and all these different pieces, you know, I look at Bravo Studio and you start playing with it and then you're like, oh, it just unlocks 1,000 other use cases that you can quickly, you know, see standing up. So I think that's brilliant. I hope that happens. Nice. Honestly, I'm here for it.
My list of to-dos to definitely pursue. We've talked about it since, you know, 80/20 first, you know, even before launch, but it's like this idea of, yes, as an agency, you're sort of, you know, you're focused on client projects and pursuing that angle, but there's exactly what you said, just by the sheer definition of being able to, you know, build tools quickly and sort of like, you know, follow our own methodology. Like, why don't we try to do some of it to, you know, for ourselves? Because clearly there's a potential need for a lot of this. And, you know, kind of following suit with what, you know, what I would say like Tiny's mantra is like, it doesn't have to be ideas that, you know, have to 10X every single year and make hundreds of millions of dollars. They could just be interesting ideas that, you know, it's just some very specific thing that I, you know, that we build that I selfishly like because it serves the greater Des Moines community or something, you know, like there's always a use case for hyper local, which I think is another interesting, you know, kind of angle with this, you know, sort of the broader idea of using no code tools for a lot of these projects is like, you know, not having to worry so much about like the scalability of things, I guess, to some extent, because you can build maybe hyper local is the wrong word, but build these quote unquote smaller concepts that work for a very specific niche of an audience that might not seem huge to some VCs by chance, but like are very beneficial and very important to that small niche just by proxy of what they do.
Oh, I love that. I've got a couple ideas for you if you ever go that way.
Yeah. Find me at max@8020.inc. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So you worked in some incredible places, and I think that brings a lot of wisdom. And when I talk to you, it's just, I'm always blown away and just super impressed by the way you think and how you approach things. And so, you know, I just wanted to see when you look at no code, what do you see in the future of the space? Do you see things people aren't like untapped potential? Do you see like this gap that you feel like is going to be, you know, what, when you look at the future of this space, what do you see?
Yeah. Right offhand, I would say, and maybe this is obvious, maybe not, but I would say like more generally, I see the broader no code versus yes code camps continuing to find common ground. Because again, back to that idea of like, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats concept, you know, there's certainly not going to be a lack of need for folks that know how to develop and know how to write code for fill in the blank, you know, like I would love to learn Swift one day because I'm a huge Apple fanboy myself. But it's like I feel like whatever that actually ends up meaning, whether it's like the tools themselves or just the you know, kind of back to I think Lacey's earlier point about just like this idea of like folks that go to school to become no coders, whatever that actually means. It seems like there's going to be some common ground there that like that gets found. You know, on the actual like tooling side or something that I would love to see, it seems like there's kind of a gap. So you might work on a project that essentially ends up involving, I don't know, like 5 or 6 tools or something. I would love to see some sort of like third party tool that helps kind of more visually connect the dots between the tools and services that you're using. You know, so imagine what, you know, like, Parabola or IntegraMAT or some of those are doing, like, you know, with you kind of connecting some of those behind the scenes pieces to make those, you know, flows happen. But as an agency, I would love to see this like broader map or diagram or flowchart or whatever it ends up being that actually shows some of those pieces being connected. And then there's got to be a better way for rather than me, like currently a lot of what we do is we'll just like draw those out and build those, you know, ourselves. But certainly like those are just static designs that don't, you know, don't go anywhere. I'd love to figure out have a company or service or whatever you're going to call it that, again, helps visualize like what's happening behind the scenes, seeing what things are connected. And then hopefully in some cases that helps just like with some of the troubleshooting issues if and when things come up, because there's always going to be something that comes up.
Sounds like your first Skunkworks project has already been scoped. I love it.
There you go.
I love it. I think it's great. No, and I think that's true. And I also feel like there's a gap. One of the gaps is scalability. You know, I think once you do prove an MVP concept, I think at some point you have to move on past a tool like Zapier or IntegraMAT, because, you know, I think about it this way. I had created this really quick product that schools were using. It was, you know, people could go in and they could submit time off and then administrators could approve it and all automated and posted through email, and it created calendar events, and it automatically created documents that were signed and placed into Google Drives and archive, you know, so it's really cool. But you have to go through and build all of that for every school, and you can't reuse this app. Like you can't just go, okay, now duplicate this app, connect it to this site and this piece and that Google account and redo everything. You know, you literally have to step by step rebuild it. And I think, you know, if you're trying to start a product, that can definitely be a hindrance. And so I'm looking, I think the next gap to overcome for no code tools is how to make this more reusable. If you did build a product so that you can easily just like clone this piece that connects to multiple things and keep moving. So that's where I feel like, I don't know, you know, I know Bubble is an all-in-one tool. I don't want to speak ill of anything. I've always found a harder time building what I feel like is a really easy to use, great looking product in it. I'm not saying it's not possible because there are some wizards out there who can do magic with Bubble. And if I spent some time in it, I could probably get there, but that feels like it's more of a challenge. But then you see a tool like Webflow where it like builds these really great front ends, but it misses that, like it misses on the back end piece. There is none of that visual, there's none of that visual logic or any of that, Zapier type, Integromat type action there. And so, I'm anxious for a tool to really capture that magic all in one, because I think it will be a game changer for a lot of people as they try to build products that they can sell. So,
yeah, it's like the how many layers or levels of Inception deep do you end up going? Because you know the tools of building the tools are building the tools for the problems that the previous tool had. So it gets a little convoluted, but I would honestly say it also gets really exciting because it's just like, I mean, certainly you all can attest to this, but it's like just the sheer potential of what could be built is just almost as exciting as like actually doing the build itself.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. The no code space excites me so much. I mean, every time I jump in to play with a tool, I'm giddy like a little kid. I can barely stand it. So
I agree. And I think part of what's also exciting, and one thing that I just absolutely love, is attempted to code or attempt, a project on their own or something, and it just kind of flopped. And now that they found a tool that works for them and they're able to execute on their idea, that to me is one of the most rewarding things. Like I get emotional about it because it excites me so much that people have the power to create and they have means to do so. And it's not this, it's like some people, and I guess I'm one of those people that's like coding. It's like, I can do it. I just don't enjoy it. I understand it, but it's just not my thing. And I just get so excited about people seeing that there's these opportunities that exist, that otherwise wouldn't exist without these tools for them. And I'm so excited to see within the next, 6 months, year, 3 years, 5 years, the kind of solutions and platforms that these people are creating, because they're like, I saw a problem and now I have these tools. I understand how to build a solution and here we go. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that, I think exactly what you said there too is like the interesting piece from the standpoint of maybe also why I was really excited to get this opportunity. It's just that sheer excitement of jumping back into, I mean, I'm certainly not necessarily getting into the weeds too much in building some of these products or tools, but like getting a chance to provide the client or that human on the other end, this end product that they think is just absolutely incredible. And certainly there's a lot of agencies that, get this feeling, but knowing how we built it and what they can end up doing with it and the power that they have with it now is it's a pretty cool feeling.
I love this. Max, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I feel like we took a lot of your time. Sorry about that, but, so much good conversation and loved hearing from you.
And thanks again. Yeah. I mean, we're obviously 80/20 is in its infancy, so to speak. We talked about a lot of things about like where we're trying to go and what we're trying to do, but obviously in the short term, it's, just leaning back on to, the pitch itself of us just trying to, help companies move faster without code is I would say if, just my selfish plug of if somebody has an idea or just wants to a specific idea or just wants to just, learn more or about like what we could potentially provide or just like more generally talk about like, Iowa maybe just, definitely shoot me an email. I feel like for as much as we sort of pitch this idea of like helping you like literally build, you know, faster and, you know, and without code. I also like the idea of like hopefully helping, you know, connect to a lot of folks in that same sense, just by like making sure that we're not leaving anybody behind, regardless of their situation or size or budget.
I know you said it earlier, but where can people connect with you? I know by email, and then you have a Twitter, right? You want to plug those?
Yeah, yeah. So my email, just max@8020.inc. You know, otherwise, you can also find me at Max Lind on Twitter, or the 8020 handle is we are 8020. You know, I would say email is probably the best, you know, the best way to reach us at this point in time. Again, it's regardless of if it's specific for a project or you're just wanting to kind of more generally just talk about the no code space or just like what you're doing, like by all means, send me an email. You know, I've luckily had a couple chances to talk on a couple podcasts now. I talked to this is really random, but I had an email from a professor in Australia, and he was teaching a business class, and part of the business class was there was a certain segment about no code tools. And long story short, I had a chance to talk to them for 30 minutes about what we're trying to do with 8020 and things we're trying to build. And it was like, it was extremely random. But it was like, he just sent me an email and explained what he was trying to do. And I, you know, was more than happy to volunteer some time and chat, you know? So I'm very much like a send that email person, regardless if it's to me or not. But like, if you want to reach out to somebody, definitely send that email, because you never know where it might lead.
I love it. That's absolutely true too. No, thank you so much. We've taken so much of your time, but I think people are going to really enjoy this. And if you do have an idea, you got something you want to talk about, reach out to Max, let him know. And thanks so much for listening. And we'll talk to you all next week.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to visualdev.fm. You can find us on your favorite social media platform at visualdevfm.